we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, October 27th, 2017. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my animal-loving vegan co-hosts, Amir Ali.
Hello.
And Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
And so today's show, we want to talk about the Netflix documentary, What the Health. Both of you haven't seen that yet, but I hope you will soon. I've seen it. And the reason we're talking about this today is because our feature interview is with Dr. Michael Greger, who is featured in the film. So Dr. Greger is a physician, New York Times bestselling author, an internationally recognized speaker on nutrition, food safety, public health issues. A founding member and fellow of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, Dr. Greger is licensed as a general practitioner specializing in clinical nutrition. He's a graduate of the Cornell University School of Agriculture and Tufts University School of Medicine. His latest book, How Not to Die, became an instant New York Times bestseller. 100% of all proceeds ever received from his books, DVDs, and speaking engagements has always and will always be donated to the 501c3 nonprofit that runs nutritionfacts.org, a strictly non-commercial, science-based public service provided by Dr. Michael Greger, providing free updates on the latest in nutrition research via bite-sized videos. There are more than 1,000 videos on nearly every aspect of healthy eating, with new videos and articles uploaded every day. And I, as a healthcare practitioner, I go to his website all the time, nutritionfacts.org, to learn things about my clients who have arthritis and all kinds of conditions. There is nutritional information on there that I definitely did not learn in school. So stay tuned for our interview with Dr. Greger in half an hour.
It's been a couple of years since I've been at the station for the fall member drive, but it is that time of year. This is an extremely important time for Co-op Radio, and especially an important time for Animal Voices. Co-op Radio is member-driven, meaning without the contributions of all the volunteers and member donations, the station could not exist. This also means Animal Voices could not exist without donations and member support. If you think about it, there aren't many stations like Co-op Radio that allow such a free platform for social justice and other pressing issues that face the world today, like environmental issues and obviously for us here at Animal Voices, animal rights. Find me another station that offers a platform for passionate activists to talk about animal rights every single Friday on FM airwaves. It's not possible. That's why we're asking for your help. A donation can be as small as a dollar. We would love if you could offer at least $5 and give up your soy latte today. There are multiple ways to donate. You can call Co-op Radio directly at 604-684-8494, and someone will take your call. Or you can donate online at cooperadio.org just by clicking donate. Outside of just supporting our show, becoming a member gets you exclusive benefits as well. You get a share in the co-op that owns the station. You get a charitable donation tax receipt. You get access to training as well as a Co-op Radio listener's guide. And there are always great giveaways that you'll be able to take part in. Co-op Radio has been around for 40 years thanks to its members and volunteers. And believe it or not, Animal Voices has been around for 20 years, which is extremely impressive. And we want Animal Voices to continue to exist because we will always need this platform to speak on the behalf of animals. Again, you can call 604-684-8494 or donate at cooperadio.org by clicking donate. Make sure also that you mention that you're donating on behalf of Animal Voices. We thank you for your continued support and could not keep this show running without you. And again, the number to call is 604-684-8494 or donate directly at cooperadio.org and click donate.
And today, joining us in studio is Jody Pongratz. She is on the show just before our show every week. So unfortunately, I only get to see you in passing, Jody, unless I go to the restaurant you work at for some delicious vegan food. So tell us a bit about your show and why you're on our show today.
Okay, well, I do sound resistance. So funny. Thanks for having me, by the way.
Thanks for coming. We love you.
Yeah, I love you guys. Actually, you guys are the reason why I'm vegan. And actually, well, Sound Resistance is a political-minded show And it's been in operation for like 12 years. I remember a couple years ago I got an award for on behalf of Sound Resistance. So yeah, Co-op Radio is, it's pretty awesome. And Animal Voice is 20 years. That's great. You guys must have gotten your award too. I actually have... yeah, so I always listen to your shows, like, you know, at first just catching it on the way home. And, yeah, over the years, it just, you know, it's just stuck with me, like, listening more and more information about animal rights. I've always been an animal rights lover, an activist, in a very subtle way. I'm more of, like, the lazy activist, you know, like, you know, I have the radio show. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's more than a lot of people being, you know, I come in every week and talk about stuff. But, like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's a good way to get the ideas out there. And, yeah, just doing, so that's how I, yeah, got interested in your show, is just, like, catching you, like you're saying, mm-hmm. we're in passing. And the more, and then it's actually really gung-ho. I'd race home, like when we were at Wall Street, race home and put the radio back on to hear the rest of the show.
I was wondering how you managed to listen, because you were always bicycling home afterwards. I thought, does she listen on the way home? That's awesome.
Yeah, until my iPod broke, unfortunately. Well, I'd catch you. I could go to work, you know, whatever.
Well, the great thing about our website is that it's so well laid out with all of our podcasts. So I always say to people, it's a really good thing to put on when you're just doing things around the house, like mm-hmm. the dishes or cleaning up. I always learn something. So I want to know a little bit more about how you became vegan from our show. Was there one specific episode, or was it just the constant preaching?
Yeah, I like to say, like, awareness raising. Yeah, I know, I feel preachy too.
I'm kidding. No, We're not preachy.
You're not preachy. I know, I love it when I catch your posts on social media and you're like, another vegan.
Yeah.
Like a triumph. Yeah, I actually, yeah, I do remember. There was a couple of shows in particular. But it's kind of a small thing, but it sits with me for some reason. I remember Allison talking about you guys do a convention every year.
The National Animal Rights Convention.
Yeah, and you, yeah, so you put up a booth, you were there.
We don't get a booth. We go to a lot of events where we do get booths, but if you're talking about the National Animal Rights Convention, we prefer to take part than have to work, because then we get to listen to all the speeches. So is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think it was a different one, but
a veg expo maybe.
Yeah. Oh, I think so.
We do a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think you guys were talking about your goals of what you were going to try and accomplish at the expo. And then when I was listening to that show, Allison was saying, my goal is, like, I'm going to talk to some vegetarians and just convince them to just go that extra step to be vegan. I'm just going to knock them right off the fence. And I was just like, yeah, I'm sitting on a fence. I've been sitting on a fence for many years. And I mean, I kind of dabbled in veganism every year. I do a cleanse and I would just eat vegan. And that was aside from cutting out, you know, alcohol and cigarettes, whatever, you know, party material, you know, I also went and ate clean. And then that mm-hmm. idea of eating clean and listening, and then just, listening to what animals go through, that was definitely took the cake.
Yeah. And, you know, let's talk about the vegetarians for a minute. So the reason that I always aim to knock them off the fence is because morally they're already there. When I ask a vegetarian if they're vegetarian for animal cruelty reasons, the answer is almost always yes. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of use their own words against them. And I say, well, did you know that in the egg industry, the male baby chicks are ground up fully conscious? And if I filled a blender full of baby chicks and asked you to hit the start button, you wouldn't. But I want you to visualize that when you go buy eggs at the store, even the humane certified ones.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
And for years, I was buying those, spending $10 a carton, thinking, I'm supporting something good. And I needed to dig beneath the surface a little bit more.
Totally.
And, you know, you say it in the least judgmental way. Just, I used to be like that too.
Yeah.
And then there's really no reason for a vegetarian to make the switch. It's easy, right?
It totally. Actually, that's actually really helpful, because often I'll get to that point. I'll be like, you know, when I'm talking about, like, I don't eat eggs in particular. And then I'll just stop right there. I won't tell them why.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's weird. There's this weird, it's very important for me to be vegan. And then, but it's like, it's not, you're not telling people what to do. You're not forcing them, but, like, you can still educate people in that nice way. And I'm always worried about being nice. I don't know.
I know what you mean.
You do come across in it. I will say to you as feedback, you do come across as someone that's not judgmental and very joyful and kind. So I think no matter what you say, you can talk about chicks and
blenders.
Yeah, grinders. And let's, you know, we've got Dr. Greger on the show today, and I often watch his videos, and in one of them, he states that if you have, that eggs are so high in cholesterol, they cannot legally be called a health food. So this is by the American standards. So the egg industries have to come up with all these creative words to try to make it sound like a health food, but they're not allowed to use that word. Mm. So I encourage you to check out his YouTube videos.
That's
and
wild.
Listen to the rest of the show today if you want to as well.
Yeah, I'll have to go race home.
Right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Jody.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's great. Very privileged to be here.
Yeah, we're lucky to have you.
Scare to care. Why don't you scare up a little cash this Halloween season? Go to cooperadio.org and click on the donate button. Don't worry, we'll wait.
All right, and now for some events then. Oh, let's see, there are a few things happening over the weekend. Tomorrow, there is a beer and burger event happening. Doan's Craft Brewing Company and the Very Good Butchers have joined forces to bring you Beer and Burger Day. $10 for a beer, for a craft beer, and vegan burgers provided by the Very Good Butchers, who we know in Victoria.
Really good stuff.
Yeah, really delicious. And they're also, they're giving their Kickstarter prizes to people who contributed to their Kickstarter campaign. So that is at Powell and Victoria, Doan's Craft Brewing Company, the Very Good Butchers. And that, I believe, starts at 1 o'clock tomorrow. I've managed to lose my notes at the last minute. You know how it goes. But yeah, check that out. Doan's Craft Brewery, the Very Good Butchers, tomorrow afternoon. I believe that is from 1 o'clock until 5. And 1 until 8. There you go. At 1830 Powell Street. So don't miss it. $10 for vegan beer and burger. That's an excellent deal. Also, tomorrow, as every Saturday, Vancouver Chicken Save will be holding a vigil at the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse at the corner of Hastings and Commercial. Do consider joining these wonderful people in bearing witness and spreading the message of kindness and compassion for the birds suffering behind slaughterhouse walls. They meet from 9 to 11 a.m., go hang out with them and then go get a beer and a burger down the street at the brewing company. So there you go. And also this weekend, Surrey Chicken Save will be holding their bi-monthly vigil at Sunrise Poultry Processors. That's on 73A Avenue in Surrey. This is the largest broiler chicken slaughterhouse in Western Canada, with around 100,000 birds killed daily at just 35 days old, and again, completely without necessity. The vigil will take place from 1 to 3 p.m., and rides can be arranged from the King George SkyTrain station at 12:30. More info on their Facebook page, Surrey Chicken Save. And Jen, you've got a special event that you've been organizing.
Oh, yeah.
Out of town. For our listeners out of town, what's going on in Hawaii this weekend?
So Allison, who's our regular producer and host, who's not here today. Hi, Allison, if you're listening. We're both going to be in Hawaii Halloween night. We are doing a Cube of Truth with a guest that we had on the radio show 2 weeks ago, Kiana. She's a native Hawaiian, and she's been organizing these Cube of Truth events. So we're going to join all the vegan activists there on the Waikiki Strip, which is obviously going to be super busy. So I think that's going to be really excited. That's where all the tourists hang out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah, and also we are trying to see if we can go to some schools with Kiana's pig, who she adopted mainly for the purpose of doing outreach.
Oh, that's...
Isn't that awesome? Yeah. Did you listen to that interview?
No, I missed that interview. I'll have to look it up on our website at animalvoices.org. Yeah, so if you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Now let's talk a little bit about Halloween coming up. Sinead You and I were talking before the show about a Mercy for Animals link that you found, talking about 8 shocking things that we do to animals. And the reason we bring this up on a Halloween show is because often activists will put on screenings of the Earthlings documentary, letting people think that it's a Halloween horror film just to get them to watch it. And really all it is undercover footage of what humans do to animals. So can we hear what you've got on your Mercy for Animals list there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I started thinking about this on my own just over the past couple of years since I've become more educated about various animal rights issues and just finding out where animal products come from. Then, you know, I'm sitting there watching horror movies around Halloween. That's one of my favorite things to do around Halloween, watch the movies and just, you know, but, and, you know, you know, I don't mean to be the vegan downer, but seriously, you watch these movies after you've been reading about what happens to animals on farms and in labs and et cetera, and you're going, man, all this stuff happening to humans in the movies, which we find to be so terrifying and awful, are things that most of us fund every day. We fund the treatment of animals in that exact way that we would do anything to avoid, you know. So So it turns out Mercy for Animals actually compiled this little list, tip of the iceberg, some of the few things, 7 factory farming practices straight out of a horror film. And
let's hear it.
And so, number 1, extreme confinement. Animals on factory farms are kept in cramped, disease-ridden conditions, and many will not see the sun until they're on their way to the slaughterhouse. Number 2, macerators, grinding machines. As you mentioned before when Jody was here, because male chicks don't lay eggs and they don't grow quickly enough to be raised profitably for meat, they're killed within hours after hatching, so just into the grinder. How many horror movies can you think of where someone gets thrown into a grinder or is like held in extreme confinement against their will for an extended period of time? Tons of movies. And number 3, teeth clipping, tail docking, dehorning, and castration. Mutilations without painkillers are standard practice on modern farms. Force feeding. Ducks raised for foie gras undergo routine force feedings with farm workers shoving metal pipes down their throats multiple times a day to induce a diseased fatty liver. And this is what people pay the big bucks for in the fancy restaurants, you know?
Disgusting.
Yeah. Thumping. Number 5, thumping. Piglets who are too sick or who are not growing fast enough are killed by being slammed headfirst on concrete floors. This is considered an acceptable form of quote-unquote euthanasia by the industry. Number 6, rape racks. In the dairy industry, cows are forcibly impregnated in what the industry refers to as a rape rack and then kept in a constant cycle of pregnancy and lactation. And I gotta say, I put it to Facebook this week. I said, okay, what are the scariest movies that you've seen? What happens in the scariest movies? And a few people said that the most horrific things that they've seen in a horror movie has involved forced sex, has involved rape.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Like, they wouldn't, like, those are the scenes that make them cringe the most. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is something that we subject animals to. You know, it's not the same kind of human dynamic that is associated with rape, but it is forced intercourse and forced reproduction in these confined conditions. And of course, number 7, slaughter, unnecessary slaughter and eating, you know, being eaten, being killed and eaten when someone could have eaten something else. That is a horrific thing that most people would not want done to them, but we do it to other animals every day. So,
and can I just say that this morning on Facebook, I was commenting on an ad for a restaurant that was advertising animal products, and a whole bunch of my vegan friends were also making comments in defense of the animals. And one of the people who responded to us, who was in favor of the restaurant, said, well, it's okay if it's humane meat and they had humane deaths. And so I just want to say that years ago, when I was this person that was shopping at Whole Foods and paying extra money for the so-called humane products, I actually thought they went to a different slaughterhouse. They don't. They have to go to the same government standard slaughterhouses. So please, the only way to be humane is to go vegan.
Yeah, you know, this Mercy for Animals list is titled 7 Factory Farming Practices, but really a lot of these things happen to animals on just about any exploitation industry, you know, and testing labs too, and just hunting all sorts of all sorts of things that we do that are just not necessary. We subject animals to this, and we just don't need to. So,
And just coming back to our fall member drive that we're doing right now, if you are interested in going vegan, we have a lot of awesome shows that you can check out in our archives on animalvoices.org. And speaking of our shows, do you have any favorite shows that are quite memorable to you that you've been part of or people that you've interviewed?
I have one, actually, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, go for it.
It was like a year and a half ago. There was this guy named Paul Ryerson. He was a professor at the University of Guelph. And you guys know who Temple Grandin is, right?
We do.
Yes.
Yeah, awful person in my mind.
Yeah.
And she was going to be doing a talk at this university, and Paul Ryerson, this professor who's actually an animal rights activist, spray-painted abattoir on one of the walkways at the university, which stands for slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And he got actually charged with mischief. And obviously this was a crazy story, and I reached out. This is when I first started producing for the show, and I reached out to him to do an interview on the show, and we had an interview together while this guy was, you know, being tried by a court, and that was a really interesting and powerful show. It kind of went awry, though, because like a week later he said, we need the show taken down because he was, you know, being tried, and they could have used whatever he said as evidence against him. But
wow.
Yeah, it was still a really fascinating experience, and I'll always remember that show.
Well, we do deal with a lot of people on the show who are involved in legal issues in regards to standing out for animals, and it's just so sad that this is a world where that is more of a crime than what we do to animals. Sinead, did you have any favorite shows that stand out to you or interviews that you've done?
Oh, it's hard to choose. There's just been so many. I just love that this show exists because, I mean, before I got involved, I was a listener for a long time, and it just means a lot to be able to turn on the radio. And, you know, I wasn't incredibly involved with all of the animal advocacy events around town, but turning on the radio and realizing there are people here who are speaking out for this issue. So, you know, if you ever feel like going vegan or something would make you feel isolated or something, it's stuff like this, like the radio and just these community things, a community radio, you know, it's so powerful in getting people together. And
yeah, I've got a list of a few of my favorite shows, if you don't mind me sharing. So Dr. Ray Greek, I interviewed last summer on why animal testing is ineffective for preventing and curing human diseases. This was a topic of my advocacy that I never felt fully comfortable talking about. I didn't feel like I knew enough, and I didn't feel that my facts were accurate. He actually bought me a copy of his book off Amazon that he wrote just for people like us who don't have scientific minds, but we want to be able to argue with scientific people on why it's not effective to test on animals. So that's a really good one. You can look up animalvoices.org, Ray Greek.
Yeah, actually, I just got a text message from Allison, our other producer. She reminded me, the Ocean Sounds show, that's the last one that I produced. It was back in June for World Oceans Day, and we had Abby Schwartz, a local marine biologist, on the show, and she played all these ocean sounds from fish and all sorts of things in the ocean, and we learned how human noise is affecting animals in the ocean. And, you know, fish are one of the animals, to me, they're sort of like, they get forgotten a lot, so I like to talk about them on this show and remind people that fish feel, repeat after me, you know?
So, people lie about that one a lot, don't
yeah,
they?
So look that one up.
Other shows that I love, we frequently do activist profiles. So we'll, you know, talk to someone that we think is really making a difference in the world, and we'll have them on. Like we had Kiana from Oahu a couple of weeks ago, find out what they're doing. And it's been really inspirational for people that are vegan, but they haven't gotten into activism yet. And we just learn how they're finding creative ways to expose animal cruelty and try to change some hearts and minds. We've had documentary filmmakers, undercover investigators. That was one of my favorite shows. We had Jeff Regeer on, who was a Mercy for Animals undercover investigator, as well as vegan triathlete Dominic Thompson. And I always like to say his biceps are as big as my thighs. And I show that picture of him to people who say, where do vegans get their protein? He's a good spokesperson for vegan athletes. We've had sanctuary owners, animal rights lawyers, Anna Pippis. She's constantly on our show. She's a Vancouver-based animal rights lawyer who focuses mainly on farm advocacy. Her group is called Animal Justice, and they do so much great work. And she's a wealth of resources for us whenever we want a legal opinion. We've had vegan chefs on the show. We had somebody that was talking about vegan cheese making.
Mm-hmm.
So tune in, animalvoices.org, co-op, please donate.
Mm-hmm. All right, and now let's get into some news. There was some pretty exciting news this week about Bill S-203, a bill that would ban whale and dolphin captivity in Canada, cleared the Senate Standing Committee on Fisheries and Oceans on Thursday by a vote of 9-5. The report will now be tabled for consideration at the next sitting of the Senate and then move to the report stage. Senators will have the opportunity to debate what's being proposed and vote on it. And if the report is adopted, it will move on to a third reading. So we're one more step in the right direction here. Bill S-203 was first tabled in June of 2015, so that's more than 2 years ago, by Liberal Senator Wilfrid Moore, with the goal of phasing out the keeping of whales, dolphins, and porpoises in captivity in Canada, with an exception for rescues and rehabilitation, in spite of what you might be hearing from the Vancouver Aquarium and other vested interests. The purpose of the bill is to criminalize the captivity of whales and dolphins in Canada. One amendment put forward this week would make it an offense, make it a punishable offense by summary conviction instead of an indictable offense, also subjects to a fine of up to $200,000. There's a grandfather clause for those animals that are already in captivity and permits legitimate research as well as the rescue of animals in distress. So it's exciting that this is moving forward. Hey, Jen, you've been really involved in this.
I have, and I would just like to ask anyone out there who's criticizing Bill S-203 to please look up some facts by watching Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, which is a documentary that was made in 2015. Everything in that film is accurate and true. You can also check out vanequafacts.org, and you can check out anything written by Dr. Jeff Math, Matthews, a local scientist and environmentalist, animal rights activist. He has a lot of articles that he's written for the Huffington Post on the Vancouver Aquarium. And please check those out and educate yourself a little bit more before you make a decision on Bill S-203 being a bad thing. It really is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, I actually realized this morning, is it Gary Charbonneau's birthday today?
Oh, yes, it is.
So let's give him a shout out.
Happy birthday, animal rights hero. We love you.
Yes, happy birthday, Gary, and thank you.
He's on a trip with his mom to Oregon right now, a well-deserved trip.
Wonderful.
He works so hard.
Wonderful. Well, in related news, Marineland in Niagara Falls has sued the Ontario SPCA, the marine land being the Marine Animal Park in Niagara Falls. They're suing the OSPCA for $21 million, filed on Tuesday. The lawsuit comes several months after a justice of the peace dropped animal cruelty charges that had been laid against Marineland as a result of an OSPCA investigation. In a statement posted on their website, the OSPCA said it vehemently denies all of the allegations and that it will defend itself, but the statement didn't explain the nature of the allegations contained in the lawsuit, so I guess that remains to be seen. Stay tuned on that, but basically more backlash from the captivity industry on the people who are trying to speak out for animals, right? Our big secret agenda.
Can I add something to that? If anyone's heard of the activist and former Marineland employee Phil Demers, we've had him on the show before. That's a really interesting interview. And actually, that interview is paired with Dr. Jeff Matthews, who I just spoke with. So he was a walrus trainer at Marineland and ended up becoming a whistleblower. And to this day, he has a lawsuit against him for speaking out. So I encourage you to look that up online and hear about it. It's a little crazy. Yeah.
And just really quickly here on another note, nonprofit research organization Faunalytics was reporting this week that a new study from Mintel shows that the main reason consumers in the U.S. are using meat alternatives is because they occasionally like to have meat-free days, with 31% citing that as the reason that they're trying these meat-free alternatives. So basically, the numbers are showing that meatless days, like meat-free Mondays, are a big factor in the alternative protein
wow,
consumption.
That's great.
And so that's kind of a touchy issue with some animal advocates. Not all of us love the idea of meat-free Mondays, but it appears to be making a difference. So, look into that and get educated.
And I just want to say there's protein in everything, so you don't have to find a meat alternative to get your protein. You can open a can of beans and it's even faster.
Yeah,
right?
They call it alternative protein and it's really just protein. Yeah.
Just like plants. Everything else that has protein. So many people are raving about the latest Netflix documentary called What the Health, a groundbreaking follow-up film from the creators of the award-winning documentary Cowspiracy. The film exposes the collusion and corruption in government and big business that is costing us trillions of healthcare dollars and keeping us sick. What the Health is an investigative documentary about health and how big business influences it. We're fortunate to have an interview with one of the vegan medical doctors from the film on our show today, Dr. Michael Greger. He will offer his thoughts on the documentary and discuss his latest best-selling book, How Not to Die, which I highly recommend as a gift for the person who has everything. I could not put that book down. Let's listen to that interview now.
In your book entitled How Not to Die and in the Netflix documentary What the Health, you mentioned the 15 leading causes of death in the United States. We're a Canadian radio program, but I think we have similar diet and lifestyle here. So I'm just going to list off the top 15 killers: coronary artery disease, lung disease such as cancer, COPD, asthma, medical error, brain diseases such as stroke and Alzheimer's, digestive cancers, infections, diabetes, high blood pressure, liver disease, blood cancers, kidney disease, breast cancer, suicide, prostate cancer, and finally Parkinson's disease. And so what do you have to say about this?
I have the Canada list here. According to Statistics Canada, cancer is now number one killer in Canada, then followed by heart disease. So it's flipped compared to the U.S. Then stroke, very similar. Then COPD. Number five is accidents. Number six, diabetes. I think that we actually share. Number six, both type 2 diabetes. Seven is Alzheimer's. We actually have more Alzheimer's. Eight is lower respiratory tract infections like pneumonia. Nine is suicide, killer number 10 here in the States. And 11 is kidney failure. Ten is kidney failure here up in Canada. But what we both share, according to the Golden Burden of Disease study, is that the number one cause of death and the number one cause of disability in both the United States and Canada is our diet. Now bumping tobacco smoking to number two. And so in Canada, number one killer is the Canadian diet. Kills more people, causes more healthy years of life lost. Number two is smoking. Number three is obesity, which of course is related to the diet. Number four is high blood pressure, which of course is related to diet. Number five is physical inactivity. So for all the people who think, oh, we just need to exercise, it's so important, that's five down on the leading risk factors for death and disability in the country of Canada.
Well, in the documentary What the Health, which you're featured in, the organizations which fundraise for research into these diseases seem unwilling to address the issue of diet. Why do you think this is?
Well, as in the documentary, I think the most compelling part of that documentary was talking about, you know, where their money is coming from. And so when Kentucky Fried Chicken comes out with pink buckets of fried chicken to celebrate, like, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Mike's Hard Lemonade comes out with a special breast cancer pink lemonade, forgetting, of course, that even light drinking associated with significantly increased risk of breast cancer. I mean, it's the same kind of, it's a bit ironic. And so one really just needs to kind of follow the money. So, of course, if you're getting money from the industries that are contributing to these diseases, then you might not speak out against them. I mean, it's the equivalent of, you know, the Lung Association getting tobacco money. What do you think they're going to say about cigarettes if they took tobacco money? Of course, they don't take tobacco money, but unfortunately, many health organizations do accept money from corporations that are selling products that are contributing to the problem.
You stated in your book that genetics often only accounts for 10 to 20% risk for most of these leading causes of death. Heart disease is the number one killer in the U.S., and you say it can be preventable. Can you tell our listeners what happens to our arteries after we eat a meal of animal products?
So number two killer of Canada, Canadian men and women, number one killer of U.S. men and women, is not only just preventable, but treatable, arrestable, reversible, curable with a plant-based diet, something that Dr. Dean has proved back with his lifestyle heart trial in 1990, so decades ago. But it's interesting. The adverse effects of certain foods on our artery function happened not kind of decades later, but literally within hours of eating them. So the original famous Vogel studies, what they do is they measure artery function in the brachial artery in your arm using something called flow-mediated dilation. So you have people eat different foods, see what happens to your artery function. The original studies were done with sausage and egg McMuffins and showed that within hours, your arteries clamp down, become stiff and inflamed, crippled, drop their ability to relax normally in half, again within hours. And then just 4, 5, 6 hours later, when finally your arteries start to recover, what happens? Lunchtime, you whack your arteries, another load of meat, eggs, dairy, such that many people are in this kind of chronic state of low-grade inflammation, which is increased risk for all sorts of things, including heart disease. And so this has been found. So you do the same thing with cheesecake. You do the same thing even with large doses of oil, which is a plant-based substance. That was one of the reasons I encourage people to center the diet on whole plant foods, is to reduce their risk of dying from the number one killer, and indeed the only diet ever been proven to reverse heart disease. This leading killer is a plant-based diet. And so I think in terms of those advocating for healthier diets, that's probably the most compelling statistic that exists. So only one diet ever been proven to reverse this leading killer, and so shouldn't that be the default diet until proven otherwise? And that can also be useful in preventing, arresting, reversing other leading killers like type 2 diabetes and high blood pressure, which seem to make the case for plant-based eating simply overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Well, animal rights activists are often told to mind their own business when we discuss what other people eat, but animal agriculture is actually affecting all of us and our environment. So let's talk about antibiotic resistance in humans and how the diets of non-vegans actually can affect the lives of vegans.
Oh, well, I mean, antibiotic resistance affects everybody. So, people, we take for granted that there are these drugs called antibiotics that can cure bacterial infections. So we've only had these for about, 70 years or so. And it used to be where, a simple childhood knee scrape could be, could lead to a fatal infection, right? I mean, how do you do surgery without antibiotics? I mean, you can't cut people open without risking, fatal blood infections. But we have these miraculous drugs, which unfortunately we are squandering by feeding by the millions of pounds to farm animals at low subtherapeutic doses. So we're not actually treating sick animals. We're just literally putting truckloads of antibiotics into the feed just to keep these animals, growing under these adverse, unhygienic, overcrowded conditions. The majority, perhaps 80% of the antimicrobials sold, produced by drug companies in the country don't go to people. Actually, they're used to feed to farm animals, and that is a problem for everyone. It doesn't matter what you eat, because that the antibiotic resistant salmonella on your roommate's chicken that drips onto your broccoli could kill you just as easy as eating the chicken itself.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about parents of young children. Why should parents seriously consider a vegan diet for their kids?
Well, I mean, that's like saying, why should parents seriously consider not giving their kids packs of cigarettes? Because you care about your kids' health. And so, I mean, the healthiest diet is one centered around whole plant foods. Doesn't have to be vegan, but the more whole plant foods we can stuff in our faces, the better. And of course, it's critically important for anyone, particularly young children, to ensure a regular, reliable source of vitamin B12 for anyone eating any kind of plant-based diet. We should follow the advice of Dr. Benjamin Spock, perhaps the most esteemed pediatrician of all time, who wrote in his 90s, in the 7th edition of his book, Child and Baby Care, one of the best-selling books in human history, in the last edition before he passed, that all children be raised with zero exposure to meat and dairy, because he was seeing these epidemics of childhood obesity and diabetes and what the grandparents were dying from. And so, we need to improve the health of the next generation, because it appears, thanks to the BC epidemic, to be the first generation in American history to potentially live even shorter lives than their parents. We don't want that to happen, so we need to give them healthier diets, and a plant-based diet is an excellent option.
Well, I was reading your book last night, and I was really fascinated to learn that atherosclerosis can develop in a baby before they've even been born due to the pregnant mother's diet. Can you explain how this happens?
Yeah, so there's if you look at by age 10, most kids raised in a standard American diet already have fatty streaks in their arteries, the first stage of atherosclerosis, which is the number one or two killer here in North America. Eventually, they turn to plaques in our 20s, get worse in our 30s, and can start killing us off in our heart. It's a heart attack in our brain, causes a stroke. But then they went back and looked at stillborn infants, and infants that died from accidental causes, even kind of, you know, fetuses still in the womb who died for whatever reason, and found that you can actually correlate these small little lesions in their coronary arteries with their mother's cholesterol levels. Now, how does a mother get high cholesterol? She eats one of three things: trans fats, found mostly processed junk, saturated fats, found mostly in meat and dairy, and dietary cholesterol, found mostly in eggs.
So for a lot of people that I speak to who are pregnant, they think it's unsafe for them to be vegan while they're pregnant. What would you say to them?
Well, it's unsafe. They're not going to supplement with vitamin B12, so that's critically important. Otherwise, actually, we have some great data showing some of the lowest preeclampsia rates ever recorded. I'm in a study at the farm in Tennessee of this group of vegan pregnancies. Vegan women have five times lower rates of twinning, because they're exposed to less dairy hormones, and that's actually a good thing, because twin pregnancies are risky for both babies and mother. You actually improve your chances of a healthier pregnancy, and what a great way to start the child out. But it's critically important to eat a healthy diet, regardless of what kind of diet you're eating. And so I would recommend, there's a whole bunch of wonderful books out now. Reed Mengels came out with a pregnancy book, a plant-based pregnancy book. Brenda Davis, Becoming Vegan, it's the classic.
I have that.
Chapters on pregnancy and infancy and childhood. And so, yeah, those. So it's important that anyone have a carefully planned diet, particularly during pregnancy, regardless of what kind of diet you're eating, and perhaps particularly important for vegan women because of the B12 issue.
Right, and you mentioned hormones. So a lot of people think that if they buy hormone-free meat, then they're not getting any hormones. But can you explain how those hormones that actually just exist within the animal are being brought into people's bodies?
Right. There's no such thing as meat without hormones or dairy without hormones. There's meat without added hormones, but the hormones exist. So dairy, that's what dairy is. It's a hormonal fluid. It's basically, it's trying to put a few hundred pounds on this little baby calf. It's designed by nature to be packed with hormones. That's the whole point of the substance. There's hormones in the body of an animal, and that's what meat is. It's parts of the body of the animal. So, of course, it has, estrogen and testosterone, and same thing with eggs. Are there health consequences associated? That's where the controversy comes in, but not whether or not these products have the hormones. That's uncontroversial.
Mm-hmm. Well, I work as a massage therapist, and I treat a lot of athletes with chronic injuries and inflammation, patients with diabetes, spinal stenosis, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's. Why and how would this population benefit from a plant-based diet?
Well, everybody. It's like, why would someone benefit from stopping smoking? It's because it's the healthy thing to do. These are the healthiest foods, the healthiest diets. Look, the number one or two reason that each one of them is going to die can be reversed with a plant-based diet. But that's why it's not for no other reason that you want to live.
Right.
That should be reason enough to eat healthy.
obvious to you and I for sure, but let's elaborate a bit on inflammation, because this is something that my patients are concerned with. So why is inflammation so bad for the body, and can you explain a little bit about it?
So inflammation, so if you get a splinter, it gets inflamed. It gets hot, red, painful, swollen. That's a good thing. It's your body's way of fighting off that potential infection from that splinter. The problem is when you have inflammation, you have this chronic inflammation that can put one at risk for autoimmune diseases, can cause all sorts of problems, can increase risk for certain cancers and diabetes and heart disease. And so it's the systemic, chronic, low-grade inflammation that's contributing to chronic disease. And a large part of that is diet. And so what can we do? We can eat an anti-inflammatory diet. That's essentially synonymous with a plant-based diet, whole food plant-based diet. Regardless of what inflammatory marker you want to look at, C-reactive protein or tumor necrosis factor, there's a whole bunch of cytokines you can look at, but you eat healthy whole plant foods, and your inflammatory markers go down. You can do this very rapidly, or you can eat lots of, processed junk, animal products, and your inflammatory markers go up. Now, some, meat is less inflammatory than others. So, for example, there's a famous Australian study where they compared kangaroo meat, which is kind of like their venison over there, with store-bought meat, and found significantly less inflammation eating kangaroo than eating whatever they bought at the store. But, so is that better? Well, sure, but why not eat foods that are actually anti-inflammatory, right? I mean, it's just, so the smaller bump in inflammation is better than a larger bump of inflammation, but how about eating an anti-inflammatory diet by eating some beans instead?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you were diagnosed with cancer tomorrow, what treatment would you use, and what is your opinion on current methods of treating cancer?
So there's lots of different types of cancer, and they're each treated differently. So you'd have to be a little more specific.
Okay. I'm unable to be a bit more specific, but are you able to talk about current methods of treating cancer and what you think about
that? Sure. So depending on what kind of cancer, so there are certain cancers that we've made remarkable strides with chemotherapy. So childhood leukemia, testicular cancer, remarkable success with various chemotherapy regimens. There are some cancers that are that can be treated very well with radiotherapy, radiation treatments, or surgery. Catch certain cancers early. You can cut it out, not worry about it. Unfortunately, for other cancers, by the time you catch it, it's already spread throughout the body, so you can't really cut it out. Sometimes chemotherapy regimens actually can do more harm than good. So it's a matter of getting the data. So okay. Demanding, okay, what's the survival advantage? So there's been studies that actually pitted different chemotherapy regimens, different treatment regimens against one another. And when the doctor says, I think you should do X, you say, okay, well, what would happen if I don't? If people in my situation that have not done X, what's kind of the typical natural course of the disease compared to option A, compared to option B, compared to option C, and basically say, look, it's my body, my choice. And if they say, well, the reason I think you should do this regimen is because people that do it live on average 4 months, and if you don't do it, you're only going to live 3 months. But let's say this is a really toxic regimen, and you're going to spend the last four months of your life vomiting your guts out with no quality of life, not being able to interact positively with your family. Well, maybe it's better to have 3 months of life mm-hmm. where you're feeling better than 4 months of life where you're feeling worse. And so that's why you need to get that information. Other people are like, I don't care how bad I feel. I want that extra month. Right?
Yeah.
It's not the doctor's decision.
Right.
It's your decision, but what your doctor can do is give you informed consent. It's like, okay, here's all the data. This is what we know. And these are the risks, these are the benefits. And then you get second, third, fourth opinions, and then you make up your mind.
And in your book, you explain that in each of our cells, we have 46 strands of DNA coiled into chromosomes. And at the tip of each chromosome is a protective cap called a telomere, which keeps the DNA from unraveling. Every time our cells divide, a bit of the cap is lost, and when the telomere is completely gone, cells die. I thought this was really interesting. They start shortening as soon as we're born, and when they're gone, we're gone. Can you elaborate on that a little bit and talk about how we can actually lengthen our lifespan by our diet?
Super cool, yeah. So the cellular aging, this is a little oversimplification, but it's kind of thought of a life fuse. So it kind of burns down as we get older. It turns out that there are certain foods associated with accelerated aging, cellular aging. Certain practices, so cigarette smoking, your telomere shortening even quicker. You eat tuna fish, even quicker. Eat soda, drink soda, they go even quicker. But other foods associated with longer telomeres. So Dr. Dean Ornish and colleagues teamed up with the woman who won the Nobel Prize in Medicine for describing this whole process to see, well, let's do an interventional study. Let's take people, put them on a plant-based diet, the same kind of plant-based diet that was able to reverse heart disease, reverse early-stage prostate cancer on average. Let's take that same diet and see if we can reverse cellular aging. Let's see if we can actually make telomeres get longer or at least slow them down. And indeed, that's what they did. Put people on a whole food plant-based diet along with other healthy lifestyle behaviors and was able to show an elongation. So increase telomerase activity, which is the enzyme that actually builds up your telomeres. And so that's really kind of exciting. In fact, that is the next book I'm going to write after my next one. So I will be writing it, 2021. It'll be out probably December 2022 on how not to age. I'm talking about all the interesting, exciting new science on longevity.
I'm really looking forward to that one. In the meantime, I'll just keep eating my plant-based diet.
Sounds good.
We often hear people defend their omnivorous diets by saying that our ancestors would not have developed the brains that we have today had we not consumed meat. What is your response when you hear this?
Oh, well, I mean, that's like saying, well, you know, we have the brains. We regardless of how we got big, huge, beautiful brains, we can now use them and use something called science, which is a tool that allows us to determine what is and is not true in the natural world, and we can put diets to the test, and we can realize what to eat now to maximize our health and longevity, and that's clearly a plant-based diet. So regardless of how we got here, we now have tools at our disposal to eat the healthiest. Now, if you develop a time machine and you want to go back a few million years and say, okay, what is best to eat back then? Well, then that's a different story. But until we have a time machine, let's deal with the modern era, which is how do we eat healthy? We don't have to go back a million years. We can use the science we have developed and with these interventional trials that have proven that a healthy enough plant-based diet can reverse many of the chronic diseases that are laying waste to North Americans.
And many people say they can't be vegan because they suffer from anemia, despite the availability of plant-based iron or supplements. Is it really true that some people just need to eat meat, as they say?
No one. I mean, in fact, the healthiest forms of iron are the non-heme forms, which are predominant in plant foods because it allows your body to regulate. Vegans don't have higher rates of iron deficiency anemia than meat eaters or vegetarians. That's not saying much because they all have pretty miserable rates. So depending on what study you look at, as many as, one in 15 menstruating women, regardless of what their dietary pattern is, has iron deficiency anemia because they're losing too much blood every month. So they need to ensure, they need to build up their blood count. And if it is indeed iron deficiency, then they need to eat lots of, beans and greens and eat vitamin C-rich foods with their meals, like citrus, tropical fruits, broccoli, bell peppers, to maximize the absorption of the plant-based iron. That's the healthiest way to get your iron, to bring your blood counts up. But if you're just anemic, the first thing you have to do is always treat the cause. It's not necessarily iron deficiency. Maybe you're losing too much blood. Maybe your spleen is eating up your blood cells too quickly. Maybe you're your kidney isn't releasing the hormone that gets your bone marrow producing blood. There's all sorts of reasons that you could be anemic. Your doctor needs to run the test to find out exactly what the cause is, and then you treat the cause.
Great. And can you tell us what you typically eat?
Absolutely. That's the second half of my book, How Not to Die, where I center my recommendations around a daily dozen foods that I encourage people to routinely get into their diet. So, legumes every day, beans, peppers, chickpeas, and lentils. Greens every day, the healthiest vegetables. Berries every day, the healthiest kind of fruits. A tablespoon of ground flax seeds, a quarter teaspoon of turmeric, the best beverages, how much exercise to get every day. I go through all that. It's available free as an app, Dr. Gregor's Daily Dozen on iPhone and Android. Encourage people to check it out just as a fun way to try to remind themselves to get lots of healthy foods into their diet.
That's awesome. And one other thing, water quality. Do you drink filtered water, or what do you think about tap water?
It depends where you live. Mm-hmm. I drink tap water. Carbon filtered tap water, just kind of like the flavor better.
Okay.
So I drink carbon filtered tap, just a plain little kind of like Brita type filter.
Great. Well, thank you so much for answering all these questions. I'm really asking on behalf of the people that I encounter every day when I do animal rights activism, and I've often thought Dr. Gregor would be better at answering these questions, and you've given me some really good responses. So thank you so much.
So happy to help. Keep up the good work.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to Dr. Michael Gregor, a vegan physician, author of the New York Times best-selling book, How Not to Die, and he was also featured in the Netflix hit film, What the Health. Check out his website, nutritionfacts.org, for all the latest in peer-reviewed scientific research. You can search any health topic that interests you. I find it to be a really great resource.
You have been listening to Animal Voices Radio on CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, broadcasting on Coast Salish territories, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. Make sure to tune in next week, Friday, November the 3rd, where we will have more animal rights-related programming for you. Remember also, it is a fall member drive. If you want to donate, call 604-684-8494. Make sure you're mentioning that you're donating on behalf of Animal Voices, or you can do the same at cooperadio.org by clicking the donate button. We also need to thank an anonymous donor who donated $300 to our show. Thank you so, so much.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, we truly appreciate it. We want to connect with you online. Follow us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, or you can email us directly at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. You can also check out our previous shows in podcast form at animalvoices.org. We leave you with a song by a Nova Scotian band named Matt Mays. The song is called Loveless. And please remember to be kind to the animals.
Was my heart, come find me and save me. Neat stars. Some diamonds from the sands of time. I mean, come on, let's face it, we ain't that young. Let's paint this town red with our blood. Oh, thank you. my ticket. Ashes to the wind. Cut my ties open. Slash them with your grin. Well, all I wanted was some sense of